Bonjour à tous et bienvenue au Corporate Chat Podcast de Miguel. Pour notre épisode d'aujourd'hui, nous vous proposons encore une fois un épisode bilingue pour refléter la riche culture du milieu des affaires à Montréal. Nous tenons aussi à remercier notre invité Daniel DeFalco d'avoir accepté de joindre à nous pour discuter sur le podcast. We would also like to thank our sponsor Red Bull to help us bring this podcast to our listeners. Sur ce, bonne écoute.
Hi, Daniel. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Mathis. Happy to be here.
So we're going to start off with our first question in French, as mentioned earlier. Donc, est-ce que tu pourrais nous parler un peu de ton parcours, puis comment est-ce que ça te mène aujourd'hui à ton poste en tant que directeur des investissements chez CDPQ?
Parfait. Et merci encore. Je suis content d'être avec vous pour le podcast. Je trouvais très sympa comme initiative que vous avez fait ça. Juste pour parler un peu de mon parcours, moi, je suis brésilien d'origine. J'avais commencé ma carrière là-bas. J'ai eu mes études, mon baccalauréat dans le commerce, dans l'Université Mackenzie à São Paulo. Et toujours dans le côté économique. Ensuite, je suis allé en France pour avoir une expérience internationale comme étudiant, et j'étudiais en grande école là-bas, qui s'appelle DEC Business School. Et c'est ça, pour moi, c'est quelque chose qui je suis très, très fier d'avoir eu l'opportunité de faire ça, et je recommande, j'encourage tout le monde qui a l'occasion de faire des études à l'étranger, c'est quelque chose d'intéressant. Bon, ça, c'est le côté, bien sûr, académique. Mais ça a toujours un lien avec l'aspect de ma carrière, bien sûr. Tu sais, il y a un aspect, Mathis, qui est dans la vie, parfois, les trucs aléatoires qui vont jouer. Et moi, j'étais, oui, intéressé pour la finance, intéressé pour le domaine d'investissement. Mais il y a une chose dans la vie que tu ne contrôles pas, par exemple. Moi, j'ai cherché mes stages d'été au Brésil à l'époque chez Standard & Poor's Credit Ratings. Aujourd'hui, ils sont connus à S&P Global, quelque chose comme ça. La franchise brésilienne. Et là, j'ai passé toutes les entrevues, j'ai vu les compagnies pour travailler avec l'analyse des crédits, des risques. Et ils étaient en train de choisir les stagiaires, l'équipe en infrastructure m'a choisi. Tu vois, et donc, depuis ce temps-là, Ma vie a pris ce détour. J'ai vraiment adoré la classe d'actifs et j'ai continué ma carrière là-dedans. Bien sûr qu'il y a une chose à mener à l'autre. Je commençais côté rating, donc on faisait des ratings sur des émissions, des obligations des compagnies d'infrastructures, d'énergie ou des projets, project finance qu'on appelle. Et avec cet exposure-là, j'ai eu l'occasion de me lancer sur d'autres choses dans le domaine d'énergie. Donc, j'ai commencé à travailler avec une industrielle au Brésil qui faisait des développements de projets d'énergie renouvelable et aussi de transmission d'énergie. C'est tellement différent. C'était beaucoup plus actif au niveau des structurations de projets. Au niveau d'amener un projet à devenir une réalité, donc des études d'ingénierie, des analyses, des modélisations, des bids, des affaires comme ça. Et ça, c'était une occasion super sympathique parce que c'est une autre perspective, toujours dans le domaine d'infrastructure. Dans la même organisation, j'ai eu l'occasion, après son IPO, de travailler avec des M&A. Donc, ils avaient fait beaucoup de croissance dans l'infrastructure. On parle beaucoup de greenfield, ce sont des projets que tu vas construire à partir de zéro. Mais aussi, la compagnie a commencé à s'intéresser à acheter des projets déjà en phase d'exploitation. Donc, je travaillais un peu avec eux là-dessus. Ensuite, j'ai fait une transition vers une compagnie d'investissement privé qui gérait les investissements pour deux familles qui contrôlent une banque locale brésilienne qui s'appelle Banque Itaú. Pour donner une perspective aux gens, c'est une banque d'une taille de TD Bank, mais au Brésil. Et eux avaient un portefeuille hors actifs financiers qui voudraient investir comme énergie, pétrochimique, matériaux. Donc, je travaille avec eux pour une période. À ces moments-là, donc, je faisais beaucoup de travail, des travaux liés à modélisation, de valuation, de suivi des investissements que la holding avait. Ensuite, moi et à l'époque, ma copine, qui aujourd'hui c'est ma femme, on avait une décision très, très personnelle. On a décidé de déménager, avoir une expérience internationale ensemble. Et on regardait des destinations au monde. Et bien sûr qu'il y avait le Canada qui nous intéressait. Il avait déjà cette expérience en France, donc ça me connectait un peu. Et c'est la façon plus facile de viabiliser ça. J'ai décidé de faire une deuxième maîtrise. Donc, j'ai étudié à l'Université de Montréal. J'ai eu ma deuxième maîtrise en sciences économiques. Le pourquoi, c'est j'étais toujours intéressé pour le domaine de la science économique, surtout lié à mon travail dans le domaine d'infrastructure. Donc, on faisait des modélisations long terme avec vue de croissance, GDP, d'inflation, des aspects macro qui m'attiraient beaucoup l'intérêt. Et j'étais en train de me préparer en même temps pour mon CFA, la certification. Et donc, j'ai dit pourquoi pas. Donc, c'était super, c'était très challengeant parce que c'était en français. Je viens d'arriver au Canada, donc c'était un français différent aussi de ce que j'avais appris en France. Donc, c'était tout nouveau, mais en même temps très, très excitant. C'était quelque chose que c'était super. Mais je pense que la beauté des choses dans la vie, c'est quand tu vas percevoir qu'est-ce que tu es bon et qu'est-ce que tu aimes faire. Et je pense que j'étais vite à réaliser que oui, j'adorais les aspects de macroéconomique liés au domaine d'investissement, mais je n'étais pas économiste. Donc, j'ai même travaillé avec des professeurs dans des recherches, des aspects pendant l'université, mais je disais non, mon truc c'est real economy, vraiment des trucs tangibles. Ça me manquait les domaines d'infrastructure. Donc, une fois que j'étais en train de finir la maîtrise, moi et ma femme, on était tombés amoureux de Montréal, on voulait rester. Bien sûr que ça fait un peu plus de froid qu'au Brésil, vous pouvez imaginer, mais non, mais c'était quand même super sympathique. Et il y a ces moments, une fois que j'ai fini mes études, j'avais le droit de rester avec mon processus d'immigration. Et là, je me suis joint à une boîte service conseil montréalaise. Qui s'appelle Plana Capital. Ils étaient très focusés dans les aspects de développement et le domaine des renouvelables infrastructures. Donc, on avait des clients. Moi, j'étais directement en accompagnant des clients qui faisaient des investissements en Amérique latine, étant donné mon origine et sa facilité. Donc, parler en espagnol ou en portugais avec ces gens-là. Et en même temps, aider certains clients qui faisaient des investissements, même dans d'autres provinces au Canada, comme Alberta, Saskatchewan. Donc, c'était super. Et en 2019, c'était quand mon chemin a croisé le chemin de la caisse. CDPQ était déjà présent au Brésil depuis longtemps, avait un bureau, je pense à ce moment-là, récemment ouvert. Mais était présent dans le domaine de toutes les classes des actifs liquides et surtout le real estate, l'immobilier. Et il commençait à faire les premiers investissements dans le domaine d'infrastructure. Donc, qui sait, on va parler un peu plus de détails ici, mais c'est un investissement que je suis toujours impliqué là-dessus. Et c'est comme ça que c'est toute l'histoire que je parle un peu d'aléatoire dans la vie. C'est ça, un truc random qui m'a amené dans une classe d'actifs et que j'ai eu la chance d'y travailler dans différentes perspectives, différents côtés de la table.
You're also a non-executive director at TAG and Varenne in Brazil. Can you tell us a little bit about how those opportunities arose and what your role is there?
Sure. I think what would be helpful. It's maybe give a little bit perspective what we do in the infrastructure team at CDPQ, right? We will be basically investing in infrastructure companies, assets around the globe. And I can give an example so that it can resonate to the audience, but just to give an idea, we are an investor shareholder of Heathrow Airport, UK. We are a shareholder of, the high speed train Eurostar. We are a shareholder of other global platforms, DP World, Invair Energy. So, and then the link to your question is, how do I get involved in this activity known as Active Director? Those are the two portfolio companies that I'm involved directly. I have key attributions to be in charge of following these investments, and one of them is to be a board member representing CDPQ interests at those investments, right? So TAG, it is a gas transportation pipeline covering the coast and part of the interior of Brazil, spanning from 4,500 kilometers of pipeline infrastructure, bringing gas to sectors that had economic needs to use gas for production, for energy generation and so on. And we have as well, like on Vereni, it's a platform that we built a couple of years ago, where it is like Brazil is known, like similar to Canada and maybe more comparable to even Quebec, quite clean energy matrix. And you have a very massive production in the north, northeast of Brazil of renewables like solar, wind, and you need infrastructure to bring that energy to the load consumption in the south, southeast, where São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro is. And then where Vereni comes, like it's an enabler. It's like transmission is a catalyst. So it's a power transmission asset that makes possible the like fostering this energy green projects in Brazil, right? So that's how I end up being having those roles that you just make reference.
Thank you for that. And what would you say was the biggest challenge in your entire career that I just talked about?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say, like in full honesty, I believe getting to the investment space, that was like the most challenging thing I've been able to do. Like I think my career went through a continuation of path, but getting to do what I do now, represent the principal equity capital, be investing around the world in infrastructure, it was quite challenging to get there. And I think I had to build a career to seize that opportunity, right? Yeah, I would say, and why? Because you're the bright side of this is like you're working with high caliber professionals, very sharp people. It's a very, fast-paced environment when you think about finance investments. So to me, well, that was my main challenge, being able to be part of the club that will be working with those type of opportunities, transactions, assets, people. So I would say so.
So we just touched on what was the biggest challenge in your career. Now, on the flip side of that, which is the most rewarding part of your job? What do you like most about your job?
So what I really like about my job, it's and I know sometimes when you think about the infrastructure asset class is not the sexiest one, like if it's not technology super modern, even though there is inside our portfolio companies, but when you think from the outside, maybe you say, oh, just look like you're doing this for the 100 years. People keep repeating this business model, but honestly, the part we like, I personally like the most, is how concrete and tangible this gets, right? We really see our projects being built. We really see the organizations that we invest impacting positively the communities around it, the economies around it, and we can see like concrete cases. Like it's not very difficult to see. You can go and can visit the asset, it exists, and you can see all the spillover, the dynamism that it brings, right? So that's the part I like the most, to be able to invest in our portfolio companies and see them thriving and impacting the communities where they're based.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And what aspect of the job takes most of your time?
So, I mean, I think what we I would divide this maybe in two fronts so that you explain I can share my day to day with you guys here, right? I think there's one part that I would divide this like as we call transactional aspect and the asset management. They're intrinsically linked, but they take different part of my day, and they vary in intensity depending on the time, right? On the transaction front, what typically you would have, basically you will be working on performing due diligence, working with analyst associates in a transaction to get a valuation, a view, what's the value of the business we are looking at, what are the risks of the business we are looking at. And then you go into really of negotiation of transactions with counterparties. You'll be interacting with people, advisors, lawyers, bankers to make a transaction come true, right? So it is lots of and this happens in a super short time frame. Typically, when you talk about transaction, you don't control that much your schedule. You will need to go as the transaction dictates, right? And you will be working not only outside your organization, but internal your organization, internally too. You need to get the teams, the risk teams, ESG team, and other important internal teams and our investment committees to back the transactions that we want to invest, right? And that takes lots of energy, coordination, and making analysis, assessment, and making everyone comfortable to be a joint decision, right? When you make an investment decision, it's not only a recommendation by Daniel, not even the Latin American team, is really an organizational decision, right? So this is in the, I would say, in the transaction front. And in the asset management, okay, very nice. You got a very interesting transaction. So when you managed to buy the asset became yours, it's an investment part of your portfolio, and you need to manage that. So it's all the day-to-day activities that you do, following this asset, having like strategic discussions with the management team of this portfolio company, following them at the committees, at the board of directors that you're part, and you'll be very involved, right? This is the moment that you will crystallize your investment thesis. Like you want to see how your asset reacts, and sometimes even an infra, if people don't think so, can be dynamic, change the directions, and you need to react very quickly and take other routes with the asset and the strategy. But that I would say it's a mix of the two, you see. And then of course, asset management you can have more visibility, but still it can consume lots of your time. During this activity.
Great. So we touched on your experiences, so credit rating, then M&A, then advisory, then the masters, and now you're in infra investments. How would you say your work-life balance evolved throughout your careers and through those experiences?
Look, Matthias, I need to be frank on this one as well. I think that this concept is very personal. Like work-life balance, I think we can not have much of fantasy around work. Work is work, right? It's gonna be very demanding. It's gonna be like very very fast-paced sometimes, and you need to perform. You need to deliver, right? And but so you need to know what you're signing up for. But once you do that, I think you have lots of fun as well. It's very stimulating. It's very enriching, like the things that you're going to be exposed to. And that comes with you dedicated to the work. So finding this type of balance is a very thin line to me personally. I don't think there's one size fits all, first of all. I think this is very personal. But I think what the question you need to do to yourself is like, what's your priority for you, right? Like, and then you make time for it, because otherwise, like, I cannot say like you have a very controlled schedule. Like, that's finance, that's the way it is, but that's very rewarding at the same time. So it's how you personally, this is very personal, like how you position yourself, how you get organized to then find this balance, right? So I don't have a general recommendation, but I typically ask people what's important for you combined with your work. For me personally, my work is very important. It's a very important piece of my life. And I would say lots of percentages involved on this, but I try to manage, like, is this part important for you? Is it like being health or having quality time for family important? You have to make the time, and it's up to you, right? You need to take the reins of your life and manage that. So that's the way I go about this. So there's no one final answer, I would say, like definitive answer, but there's more like personal to each one.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. Now moving on to the market segment, CDPQ was created in 1965 by the Quebec government to manage the funds of the Quebec Pension Plan, a then newly created Universal Retirement Plan. From there, it's evolved considerably. Could you tell us a little bit more about CDPQ and its dual mandate?
No, sure. I'll be happy to do so. I was very impressive, like, once I moved to Canada, to learn about the Maple 8, as we call the Canadian model of this pension funds and this, its governance and the type of prime investor it is around the world. Like, I knew about the Canadian investors before coming to Brazil, to Canada, excuse me, and because they were present in Brazil. But CDPQ, just to give everyone a perspective, it's, we are a global investment firm, right? So we are a global investment group. We manage the assets of that are entrusted to us from 48 depositors coming from pension and insurance plans and schemes in the province of Quebec, right? So those are our clients, our depositors, that ultimately benefits 6 million people inside the province, right? I think this is, we can never forget, because that's our north, that's who we work for, basically. And I take this very seriously after some years here. I think that's the thing that gets me very stimulated every morning. So CDPQ at the same time has like this dual mandate that you asked about. And what is this? I think this is quite unique to us compared to the other, our Canadian peers, cousins, and so on, which is we seek to find optimized, let's say, risk-adjusted returns for our depositors as they are entrusting us their funds, but at the same time, bringing economic development for the Quebec province, right? And this is very unique. Like, CDPQ, to give it everyone's perspective, is 450 billion Canadian dollars AUM, asset under management. And the entity is just shy of 100 billion invested within the province, right? And that's massive. I think this is unheard of around the world, like, not only here. And the way, and the way this is done, I think that's what impresses me a lot. The capillarity of the teams that will be dealing with PME, will be dealing with big corporations of Quebec, and having an outreach through the province, and seeking this maximization of return, we undo risk, right? And without taking undue risk. And this this is done like very, in a very concerted manner. And on top of that, which I believe is the part that makes me very excited, is they do that hand in hand with being a global investor, right? So 75% of the portfolio is invested outside Canada. So how do you do that, right? You need to be a global organization. You have this dual mandate, and you are a global organization investing money around the world. And take my case, like, I'm a Brazilian national, being based out of Montreal here, I travel a lot for the work, but you see, like, they take seriously to have the right professionals doing the work and having this global perspective as an investor, right? So that's what is unique about us, right? And I think other investors will do international investments as well, but the way we do, the way we export this way of investing that comes with a governance structure package and view of value creation and get our portfolio companies to thrive and at the same time delivering returns to our depositors, right? So connecting those all of those things is something that it makes me very proud to be part of the organization.
So you mentioned that CDPQ has more than $450 billion of asset under management. Could you walk us through an example of how that capital is being deployed by walking us through an example of a deal that you worked on as part of CDPQ's infrastructure team?
So I think the example I will share with you guys here is really related to our investment in Verein Energia, the one you mentioned at the very beginning. So to give an idea, like, this is a transmission asset in Brazil. We have been studying the sector in Brazil since 2019, and we studied many opportunities. We assessed many different type of investment structures, and it took us until 2022 to be able to successfully buy our first base of an asset to create our platform there, which is now known as Verein Energia, right? So that's an example that we see our capital being invested to put together a platform and from that platform, from that base, grow the business, optimize the business, bring the business to another level, right? And I think we've been quite successful in this. Since we built the platform, we have performed further acquisitions, and now I think we have a sizable investment on the sector. We don't want to stop where we are. We want to continue to do, but we are a relevant player in the sector, and that comes from scratch. And that's something that we're very proud of, but we don't only like we're not going to only bring in capital to grow the business, right? We bring, like, as I mentioned before, like, strong governance. We bring a view, like, on ESG. We bring a view on diversity. We bring a view on operational excellence. We bring a view on value creation, and that's part of the package. It's not only capital the way CDPQ is investing in the assets, right? It's really taking it to another level, and we will be like, and then it's all about people too, right? And then once you have a nice business and you have a nice investment thesis, it's like you need someone to run that business for you, right? So you need to get the right C-level to be involved in the asset. So there's lots of a day-to-day that you spend talking to key executives at those firms. So you see, like, your investing is the capital per se, is like how you make the most of this capital that's being invested with the right teams, the right platform, and the right path for you to capture growth and performance,
And what would you say are the biggest challenges when it comes to infrastructure investing?
Like, people may say, oh, scalability, high leverage, and so on. Like, yeah, those are variables that are important. But for us, I think personally, but I'm pretty sure part of my colleagues at the team share the same view. It's how you differentiate yourself from competition, right? How you are something beyond capital, right? There's lots of liquidity dry powder around the world. Year after year, GPs raising fund multi-billion funds and with a massive amount of capital to be deployed in high quality assets. So everybody will be looking more or less at the same opportunities, right? If you're looking for high quality assets. And you need to be very disciplined because we cannot never let it go the return part that I mentioned in our dual mandate, right? We cannot under deliver something to our depositors because of competition. So that requires you to be creative, innovative, how you're going to go about transactions. And how you go and talk to partners, sellers, and they perceive you're different. And that you need to come with other aspects, the things that we discussed here on governance, but also like when you build some platform, you know, people may understand you not as a pure financial investor, right? You can come with a strong ownership, long-term view, very long-term view that I think is quite unique to us too. We don't need to buy and sell infrastructure in the next semester, not even in the next 7 years, right? So I think the idea is like, what can you do beyond capital, right? Because that's lots of money around the world to be invested in the right infrastructure assets, right? And I think what we do, it's the combination of things I mentioned beforehand, like on having teams, having the support of the organization, having procedures, having like, for instance, inside CDPQ, we have a team of, we are investors, like myself, I'm an investment director, right? But we do have people in the team that they were former CEOs, CFOs, COOs that we call operating partners. And they go and they team up with us to help our portfolio companies or to even help partners or originate business in a different perspective, not only capital, right? I think that's what you have to do. And that's what you have to try to differentiate yourself in an environment like this of high liquidity. For me, it's competition. The main challenge in the asset class is competition. It is a very attractive asset class, right? Because for instance, when you think of the perspective of our depositors, what they like infra? Because infra has a few characteristics that are very interesting. Long-term, and our depositors will be paying pension not the next year, not the next 10 years, generations to come. So you have a very interesting match of an asset with a liability of our depositors, right? There's also this thing of inflation protection and being contracted cash flows, right? Where you make most of your returns through yield, like what the return you get. You don't buy and sell as an example I just gave. And that's why like you need to be creative to bring this important asset class to have a significance in our portfolio because our depositors like that. They have a very unique characteristics that match very well what they need. But how you differentiate yourself to get exposed to the asset class is the main challenge personally to me.
With on-site experience in Quebec and Brazil's finance and infrastructure industry, are there some differences you observed, whether it be on the cultural level or just the way economies operate differently?
Sure. I think like, honestly, I appreciate a lot about working here in Quebec after a little bit more than 7 years, I think it's a quite open environment for discussions, collaboration. And at the same time, like professions are very sharp, results driven, right? Results oriented, and things get done here. So that's something that I really like it, this efficient and effective way of working. At the same time, Matthias, in my case, is like, I'm very fortunate to work with one of the most international teams inside CDPQ. So I have this perspective here, but I'm surrounded by different backgrounds, different perspectives and diversity point of view from my colleagues, right? And that I can have in Quebec, here in Montreal. That's amazing to me, right? That's something that I really appreciate. I see more similarities to Brazil than thinking particularly in finance. I wouldn't say infrastructure. I think we might actually local investors, but maybe slightly less developed on sophistication. But the market there for finance and banking, it is quite sophisticated as well. And you see very competent professionals. So I see similarity. It was very easy for me to integrate, and I like that mentality that I told you, like very efficient, but at the same time, very welcoming, you know.
So we discussed an overview of CDPQ globally. I also met with your colleague in private equity. Specifically for infrastructure, so we discussed a deal, but could you shed some light on the infrastructure portfolio at CDPQ?
Absolutely. And I'm happy that you're coming here second time. You're always welcome. And happy to share a perspective of the infrastructure portfolio, right? I think I explained already why it's attractive for us and for our depositors, the asset class. And on the infra, so this is not me saying, not even CDPQ talking about itself, but it's really like the like third-party ranks and organizations outside. Like we were ranked the largest infrastructure investor in the world, right? We've been doing this for more than 25 years of direct investing in infrastructure. Our portfolio from the 450 billion globally that CDPQ has, for about 14-15% assigned to us to invest in infrastructure, which is north of 60 billion Canadian dollars, right? Investing in more than 50 companies and about 18 countries around the world. So that just to give everyone a perspective on the portfolio. And we are doing more and more. Since I joined here, I can see this trend since 2019. We are doing lots of co-control to control. Like we could, if you think about us as a financial investor, but with other capabilities that I just described through the process, we are basically being able to own 100% of different companies, right? Having full control. And that comes with lots of responsibility too, and comes with lots of an agenda that's broader than capital that I just described, right? I think that's something particular to us that I think we are doing it well in the asset class. And we wanted to continue to do so because they match the platform angle that I explained to you before, where we can have the chance to reinvest capital in that entity to grow those business, to make them thrive. And I think that's the way we're doing this. And I think we've been quite successful. The team in infra, like we're about 80 investment professionals around the world and investing globally, right? And with great exchange, a great view from different teams, connecting dots around the world. And I think that's only possible because inside the organization, we have the mandate to do so, which has been quite amazing since I joined here.
So we touched on the infrastructure asset class here at CDPQ. Now, what trends and practice areas are you most excited for, looking forward to 2024 and beyond?
Well, 2024, year end is around the corner, right? But I got your question. And I think, here's the thing. I think the way we're, like, in terms of priorities for us, we will, as I mentioned to you, like the reinvesting in our platforms, it is a priority to us. We have done that. I can give the Latin American examples on TAG and Vereni, but we have other in our portfolio. So this is something like we're always happy because once we invest in the right platform, it's amazing that you can grow and you can get more exposure to the asset class through that premium platform. So this is something that we want to continue to do. And I think we will be there supporting our portfolio companies. What we see us doing is a very active management of our portfolio too. I mentioned to you, we're not in the need to buy and sell. We are not in this business necessarily. Like we have a view of yield, but if there's opportunistic sales, opportunities for syndication and opportunities to optimize capital structure, we want to be active to max out the type of returns the assets deliver to our portfolio, right? So this is something we really want to be active. And I think when you think of priorities, like definitely renewables is something that we take very seriously here. We have a huge portfolio around the world investing in that sector or adjacent to that sector, like the example of the transmission I just gave you. So we wanna continue to do that with a ESG focus and greenify and help our portfolio companies to reduce their carbon footprint, right? And in that example, I think we can get very concrete things to share with you guys. So inside GDPQ, we have two envelopes that we can allocate capital. One is green envelope. It speaks by itself, right? We have a huge ambition to be a significant investor in the renewable sector or green mobility and other type of sectors that they have this green aspect. And we want to continue to deploy capital on this, including transmission, for instance, T&D that works as an enabler to facilitate renewables. But at the same time, we wanted to, we have another envelope that's called energy transition. So how to get our portfolio companies, which are not the greenest ones, to make an energy transition or to get to, let's say, cleaner process or more environment friendly processes and reduce its carbon footprint. And we have a dedicated envelope. So we are, and we have showcases already in our inside our portfolio that we could allocate those envelopes to work. So this is something that we will continue to not only 2024, but down the road, we do believe it, there's room for us to continue investing, and it will continue to be a priority, right? And I think we are pretty much present in the most of the segments of infrastructure, right? From ports, airports, renewables, utilities. And then we also have even, let's say now when things can get more interesting, like even digital infrastructure, right? And this is something like, oh, there's characteristics of technology and other aspects to it, but depending on the contractual framework, this can become really infra type assets, right? So we are very well positioned on those. We will continue to look those sectors, and we will be very active on reinvesting our portfolio companies, benefiting from the envelopes that I just gave you as an example, just for illustration, of course.
Now moving on to the mentorship segment, what qualities do you believe are essential for effective leadership in finance, and how can someone develop these qualities?
It's a good one, Matthias. Look, I think on the technical aspects, either at university or if you're doing some type of course, I think you can build the technical and the hard skills like that. That's like, it is expected from you that you will know, like in finance, the technical matters. What I always recommend everyone as early as possible in your life, it's trying to develop the soft skills, right? How do you go about connecting to people? How do you go about dealing with situations under pressure? You know, this is like not necessarily you'll be learning. I think you guys at a very good university, probably you are. But learning those things too, but that takes practice. There's no recipe for this to work. It's a try and error. Like I do recommend people like try to build soft skills and try to build like interpersonal skills to connect to people, to get to know people, because then it is something that will have a positive spillover in to get your hard skills to be performed, you know? So to me, that would be my recommendation, honestly.
And what would your best advice be for someone graduating from university?
I think stay humble and curious to think, right? Meet people, get vulnerable, you know, try to connect as much as possible to people. Go do a podcast maybe, right? So I think you guys are doing great, but also work a lot and you will deliver cool stuff, right? I think those will be my humble and curious and work a lot. I think we'll get you to the right place personally.
And how should students go about finding an internship? And if you have any insights on the recruitment process at CDPQ specifically?
Yeah, sure. No, so I'll answer in two ways, right? I think the first one that I'll try to address more openly, and the second part, maybe I can speak the CDPQ case to help you guys understand. But I think, first of all, like for any an internship, I think on the curiosity part that I just mentioned, you need to understand what really interests you, right? And once you have a real interest in something, you get to know and get to learn something and get exposed more and more to this thing, and that open your mind to different perspectives, right? And with that can get a desire like, oh, maybe I would like to try this. I would like to have the possibility to work a little while on this, right? So I think you need to be curious. You need to be exposed to different perspectives, and that will give you like, okay, those are the things I like. Those are the things I like less. And with that, you can. I know I'm talking, it sounds very obvious, but really, I do believe it's important because sometimes we just go with the inertia. We're talking school, very competitive environment. Everyone's like looking for an internship. No, think about like what I really like. And then you go little by little, position yourself, connect to people. And then one thing will lead to another. Like, not necessarily the first thing you thought that you want to do is exactly what you will be doing, right? And let random play some role in your life too, right? As I gave in my example. But really, try to find what interests you, and then you can try to land an internship that can fit that. But also be open to change your route. Sometimes you thought you liked something and you're there. It's like, okay, maybe I don't like, but find the right balance. I think you need to be resilient as much as you can, but not being trapped in a situation like, no, since I took that internship, I really need to. The good thing about an internship is like 3 to 6 months, right? So you can say, okay, I tried, I did not like, I will survive. It's 3, 6 months of my life. But be quick to realize, okay, I take a detour very quickly, change, try something else, but without giving up too early either. So it's find a balance on this, you know, like if you don't like, try for a while, but then if you really confirm you don't like, I think try something else. In practical terms, thinking about CDPQ, we do have our web page, www.cdpq.com. There's the career session. There's the internship session on that site. You can see all the offers that we have for fall, for summer, even for longer period, if I'm not mistaken. And go there, see what's available. And you can apply, you can check. There's our LinkedIn page as well. Typically, CDPQ will be at most of the universities here in Quebec, attending the career fairs. So you're gonna see a booth of CDPQ there. You can meet representatives of the talent acquisition or even the contracting, the hiring teams directly that you can exchange. But most importantly, try to talk to people at your university or your network that did internships here. They can provide you perspective, right? But every year we welcome, like, I think it's about 100 and above of internships, interns from different, way different asset classes. And you know, not only investments, that's something that I think is important too. Like, CPQ is really working hard to get involved to new technologies and so on. So we have room for engineers, we have room for people working in coding. So really go check what's available. You will be impressed. That's way more than just pure finance or finance linked, but with other perspective. And go apply and talk to people, you know.
So to close off the mentorship segment, what advice would you give to someone starting in the financial industry?
So that one, be prepared for work hard. Honestly, it's a fast-paced environment, but I think once you take that mentality, I think that's okay. You know, it is manageable, but be prepared. I think that will be my recommendation.
Now moving on to the rapid fire questions. What is the best piece of advice that anyone has ever given you?
That That one was a harsh one, but today I take this very, very well. So here it is. So you're not special to the world. You are special just to some people, and that's okay. So that was an advice. I was like, okay. I was like, yeah. But once you have that mentality, I think you control your life in a better fashion, personally. So that was a nice one. When they gave me that one, I was like, okay. It took me some time to digest, but I think I take it well now.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how important would you say your GPA is as a student?
Look, Matt, that would depend. I think can go. I don't want to say that's not important. I think it is important, like you're a student. But it can go from 0 to 10, maybe not 0, but something in the mid to 10. But that depends more where you are in the stage of your academic life and professional life. Because, okay, if you're only studying, doing anything else, maybe you need to be closer to 10. Because how are you going to position this? Like, oh, I'm just studying, like I'm just doing... But if you're doing other stuff, if you're getting involved to associations, if you're doing volunteers, if you're traveling, if you're connecting, if you're doing other stuff, maybe you don't need the 10, need something a little bit below that, right? And is how you position this to people that want to talk to you, maybe for an internship or a job position. It's like, okay, look, if they ask you about the grades, I think you should be able to own it to say like, look, yes, I see it, but I did this and that, and I traveled the world. I made like other experiences, and you know, like McGill, like you guys involved in the podcast, but there's like the activities of investment by the students, associations, you know, there's trips with the school. So I think you can do a bunch of things. Volunteer. So I think the answer is like, doesn't need to be a 10. It doesn't need to be a 0 for sure, but I don't think it's the only thing about you. But if you're only dedicated to school, you'd better get nice grades, right?
Totally. If you wouldn't be in the financial industry, what would you be doing instead?
That's a good one. Like, look, I think I would be doing something related to diplomacy or politics.
And to close off the podcast, what is one book you would recommend to our listeners?
Maybe I would disappoint you guys because it's not finance related, if that's okay. No, but I really believe it's a gem. Once I read this, I really liked it. And it's not really related to finance. Help us put our things together and learn sometimes. And it's called the subtle art of not giving a frick, to speak politely here. And you guys Google it. It's from a great author called Mark Mason. And what I like this about this book, it provides very different perspectives, sometimes very counterintuitive on self-awareness and personal development. Yeah, although not being finance related, link it to the part I mentioned to you on soft skills and connecting to people. That's a great book. Helps everyone and to digest if you're going through difficult times or if you're thinking about what you want to do with your life. I personally find this book to be very helpful.
Yeah, totally. And just going back to what you said about the importance of soft skills, I mean, just totally justifies that you recommend a non-finance book, so totally not an issue. But yeah, that closes it for the podcast. So thank you for being so generous with your time and doing this interview.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Merci d'avoir écouté notre épisode. Si vous avez apprécié le contenu, n'hésitez pas à nous suivre sur Spotify, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts ou Instagram. Merci beaucoup et à la prochaine.
The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and to inform our listeners. It is by no means a substitute for professional guidance by qualified experts. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute financial or other professional advice or services. Instead, we encourage you to discuss your career options, as well as financial undertakings with other professionals who specialize in wealth, securities, asset management, or any other field in financial services. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at a personal and individual risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice. Guests who speak on this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. The views expressed on this platform are personal opinions and only, and should not be construed as financial advice for your given situation or from a given institution. While all attempts are made to present accurate information, it may not be appropriate for specific circumstances, and information may become outdated over time. No firm, nor any company providing financial support, endorses or opposes any particular view or tools discussed in this podcast. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Advertising, which is incorporated into, placed in association with, or targeted towards the content of this podcast is forbidden. This podcast may not be edited, modified, or redistributed. The Corporate Chat Podcast has no liability for any personal activities in connection with this podcast or for personal use of this podcast in connection with personal websites, computers, or playing devices. Moreover, the Corporate Chat Podcast makes no warranty that this podcast or the server that makes it available is free of viruses, worms, or other elements or codes that manifest contaminating or destructive properties. McGill University and our sponsors expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, reliance on, or inability to use this podcast or the information presented in this podcast.